wide rhythm number, but nevertheless a swinger. And before that, from a February 1945 air check from the Meadowbrook, a number called Midriff. I'm sure you recognize the drums of Buddy Rich, the DeFranco clarinet, Charlie Shaver's trumpet, and the tenor of Al Klink, with Tommy Dorsey's orchestra. Buddy DeFranco's clarinet on the swing era. To take us to the bottom of the hour, Tommy Dorsey and Buddy DeFranco with Opus 1. Absolutely no question about it, you are listening to The Swing Era. I'm your host, Bud Pearson, and I would welcome any comments or requests. Just email us. Our address is swingera@earthlink.net. That's swingera@earthlink.net. Back to the swing era, the year is 1944, and here's Gene, Dodo, and Buddy. Thank you. You heard it on the swing era, the clarinet of Buddy DeFranco, featured with the Gene Krupa V-Disc Trio. They performed Ellington's Hodgepodge from May 1944. All three participants were working with Tommy Dorsey at the time. The piano was Dodo Marmarosa and, of course, Gene's drums. And to begin the second half of the swing era, the Krupa DeFranco Marmarosa Trio again from the same May 1944 session with a lively Liza, the clarinet of Buddy DeFranco, and you heard it on the swing era.
Tommy Dorsey and the Sentimentalists in I Never Knew.
Anybody better. baby, like I'm loving you.
DeFranco and his clarinet just up, again with Tommy Dorsey, and Kern's The Song Is You, a Victor recording from April 1946, featuring some smooth Dorsey trombone, Charlie Shaver's trumpet, and Buddy playing a nearly perfect eight bars. And before that, the Clark Sisters, also known as the Sentimentalists, sang with T.D., I Never Knew, from a V-disc broadcast of April 1944, with DeFranco's clarinet, Al Klink's tenor, and I believe Pete Condoli's brief trumpet. And at the top, Gene Krupa's drums kicking it off, sounding almost like Buddy Rich with Cy Oliver's Well Get It, featuring more blazing Buddy DeFranco clarinet, along with T.D. and the tenor of Al Klink. The trumpets, I would guess, were Pete Condoli and Joe Somebody. On the swing era, celebrating the clarinet artistry of Buddy DeFranco. On the Swing Era, a Metronome All-Stars session from December 1947, and with a tune titled Leap Here, featuring the winners of the annual Metronome Magazine poll of jazz musicians. And as usual, Buddy DeFranco won the clarinet category. Featured alongside Buddy was the piano of Nat Cole, Bill Harris's trombone, Dizzy Gillespie's trumpet, Flip Phillips' tenor, Eddie Safransky's bass, and the guitar of Billy Bauer, and a subdued Buddy Rich on drums. And in the middle, Buddy with an August 1949 group with Penthouse Serenade. And starting the last set, another Metronome All-Stars recording, this one from January 1946 with the 45 winners, again with Buddy like a breath of fresh air on clarinet, with the tune titled Look Out, composition of Cy Oliver. Both critics and musicians agree that Buddy was the first artist to bring modern jazz to the clarinet, with great range, technique, tone, fire, and imagination. And, as you heard today, he could swing. And there you have it, clarinet genius Buddy DeFranco on the Swing Era. That's it. Hope you enjoyed master musician Buddy DeFranco today. So many recordings and so little time to play them. But we'll trek back to the record vault for more discs. Till then, this is your host, Bud Pearson, inviting you to join us here next week when we'll present more artists who created the styles and the sounds of the swing era. We'll see you then, and remember, it don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing.
KCEA Atherton Redwood City, a broadcast service of the Sequoia Union High School District, home of Tide Academy, online at kcea.org.
Did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll keep you in suspense with Actor's Blood, starring Frederick March. But first, on the lighter side, it's the Abbott and Costello Show. Abbott and Costello, remembered primarily as a movie team, got their first shove toward stardom in radio and stayed with the medium through the 1940s when their famous film comics was at its height. It brought an old-style vaudeville feeling to radio, stand-up comedy that consisted mainly of short skits involving clever plays on words. Signed by Universal in 1939, they almost single-handedly bailed out the financially troubled studio. Their own regular show on NBC was first heard in October of 1942, continuing for 5 years. Eventually, the Abbott and Costello Children's Show was heard Saturday mornings on ABC from 1947 through 1949. Consistently heard by more than 20 million listeners, it supplemented such films as Buck Privates, In the Navy, and Hold That Ghost to keep their names consistently at the top of the zany comic heap. Return with us now to those exciting days of yesteryear with Abbott and Costello and Costello Invests in the Stock Market from March of 1947. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks.
laughter of Duffy's Tavern. Helen Trent, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Bert and Marge, Amos and Andy. Do-de-o, do, radio. I miss you so.
That's right, Paul. C for comedy, A for Abbott, M for Maxwell, E for Ennis, L for Lou Costello.
Hey, Costello, Costello, come over here. Look at you. Look at yourself. You're all covered with dust.
Huh?
You're all covered with dust. Where did you get so dirty?
I was over at your house, Abbott. I've been helping your wife do her spring cleaning.
My house isn't that dirty.
Oh, no? When I got through cleaning, we found four new rooms. Hey, Abbott, I nearly got arrested, too.
How come?
I ran out on the porch to shake the dust mop, and a woman across the street called the cops.
Why?
She thought I was choking your wife.
Oh, talk sense. You know, you ought to have a house of your own and settle down. Find some nice girl. Why is it you don't ever seem to get along with girls, Lou?
Abbott, when it comes to girls, I really got a late start in life. You see, my parents were very strict.
You mean they wouldn't let you go out with the opposite sex?
They wouldn't even tell me which was the opposite sex. Only this morning, my father told me never to go out with girls.
Where's your father now?
Out with girls? But since I'm out here in Hollywood, Abbott, I found out about girls. I've rubbed shoulders with Lana Turner, I rubbed shoulders with Hedy Lamarr, and I rubbed shoulders with Betty Grable.
And what did you find out?
They all wear shoulder pads. But I don't worry about girls. I'd rather have my canary. She's so smart.
What do you mean, so smart? What's so smart about a canary?
Can you take a bath in a saucer?
Talk sense. How about Marilyn Maxwell? Don't you date her anymore?
I called Marilyn yesterday to go nightclubbing with me, but she wouldn't go.
Well, so what? There are other fish in the sea.
Yeah, but how would I look dancing at the Macambo with a mackerel?
Costello, you're the dumbest man I ever met. You're a baby baboon.
Well?
Did you hear me?
Yes, Daddy.
Listen to me, you nitwit. Tomorrow is Marilyn Maxwell's birthday. Now, if you want to make a big hit with her, why don't you buy her a nice present?
Well, I only got a few dollars, Abbott. I can't buy her nothing expensive.
Oh, have no fear, Costello, but Abbott's your pal. He'll help you. You know me.
Yes.
I'll show you how to make some money fast. We'll invest your money in the stock market. Now, you know my brother has a seat on the curb.
Yes, I know. Isn't he afraid he'll catch cold sitting there with his feet dangling in the gutter?
No, you dummy. When I say he has a seat on the curb, I don't mean he sits on the curb. I mean his seat is on the curb.
No matter how you look at it, Abbott, he's a loafer.
He's not a loafer, he's a broker.
He ain't any broker than I am.
Costello, he's not broke, he's a broker. A broker is a trader.
Your brother's a trader?
Certainly. He's one of the biggest traders in the country.
Bigger than Benedict Arnold?
Costello, Benedict Arnold was a traitor. My brother is a trader. He goes into the market and sells short.
He sells shorts? Oh, you mean he's an underwear trader?
No. Now, my brother sells short in the market. He's a bear. A man that sells his stock short in the market is a bear.
Any man that will sell his shorts in the market deserves to be bear.
Oh, Costello, there are two kinds of traders in the market. There are bears and bulls.
Now, they got bears and bulls in the market?
That's right.
No wonder the meat I've been getting is so tough.
No. You idiot, I'm not talking about a meat market. I'm talking about a stock market. The traders are called bears and bulls. The bulls are short and the bears are short and the bulls are long. And they're always fighting each other. And that's what makes the market go up and down.
They got long bulls fighting short bears, and the market is going up and down.
Yeah, certainly.
No wonder the joint is jumping. Hey, Abbott, have you ever been mixed up with them bulls?
Why?
You sound like you had a couple of snorts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, dummy, I'm only trying to explain to you that my brother is a broker and he has a seat on the curb.
Did he always have a seat on the curb?
No, he used to have a seat on the exchange, but the bottom dropped out of his shares.
The bottom dropped out of his shares?
Yes.
Well, if he's too cheap to get new bottoms for his chairs, let him sit on a curb.
Oh. No. He's doing all right. He made a fine investment. He just bought some gilt-edged debentures.
Then why don't he get up off the curb and sit on a debenture?
No. Shut up and listen to me. My brother is a broker. He takes people's money, invests it. He puts it in something.
What does he put it in?
Well, sometimes he puts it in oil.
He puts money in oil?
Certainly. Oil is a solid investment.
Oh, I see. He puts it in solid oil. Then I suppose he pours vinegar on it and eats it. Now, there's a pretty picture for you. A bowl of crispy 10s and 20s with mayonnaise on the side.
Oh, no. You're simpleton. You can't make a salad of money. Money is legal tender.
No wonder it's tender. Your brother keeps digging it and dipping it in oil.
No. He does not dip it in the oil. He invests it. Here, I'll give you an example. Suppose you want some steel stocks or copper stocks, or you want to get into American Can.
That did it, Abbott. This time you've gone too far.
What do you mean?
Well, I didn't say nothing when you told me your brother sits on a curb in his shorts. I didn't call the FBI when you told me that he was a traitor. And I didn't squeal to the Humane Society when you said he chases long bulls and short bears around in the market. But when you have the nerve to tell me to steal stock so that a copper can throw me in the can, you have not only blackened my good name and impugned upon me, but you have cast a smog over the United Nations conference. And that's not good.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Time now to light up a camel and listen to Skinny Anna sing.
Heartaches, heartaches, my loving you meant only heartaches. Your kiss was such a sacred thing to me. I can't believe it's just a burning memory. Heartaches, heartaches, what does it matter how my heart breaks? I should be happy with someone new, but my heart aches for you. Does it matter how my heart breaks? I should be happy with someone new, but my heart aches for you.
Something nice for her birthday. Now, why don't you get her a nice mink coat like Mrs. Wetwash wears? Now, that's an Eastern mink with fur 5 inches long.
It looks more like a Western skunk with 5 o'clock shadow.
But you should give Marilyn something expensive. She never forgets you.
You're right, Abbott. Last year, she gave me a lovely present, a Japanese Harry Carey sword with a complete set of instructions.
You talk sense. if you invest those few dollars on the stock market, you can make enough money to buy her a mink coat, Lou.
Well, if it isn't Mr. Abbott. Oh, I see you're going back in vaudeville.
Mrs. Wetwash, I am not going back in vaudeville.
Then what are you doing with that trained seal? Oh, pardon me. It's Costello.
Now, just a second, Mrs. Wetwash. I don't look like a trained seal.
Maybe not, but I'm thankful I'm not a herring.
You ain't half as thankful as the herrings are.
Cut that out, Costello. Mrs. Wetwash, Costello wants to make some money quick. Now, your late husband made a lot of money. Could you tell us how he did it?
Well, my husband was a powerful man. He was a magnet.
He must have had a powerful magnet to pick up a load of scrap iron like you.
Why, you cut-rate Sidney Greenstreet? Mr. Abbott, why does Costello need all this money?
Well, it's Marilyn Maxwell's birthday, and Costello wants to buy her a mink coat.
A mink coat from Maxwell? What do you see in Marilyn Maxwell? Why? Take away her blonde hair and her good looks, and what have you got?
I don't know, but you can deliver it to my house tomorrow morning.
Oh! Oh! You're in the house! Goodbye!
Well, Costello, that settles it. We're going to the broker's office and invest your money. Come on. Well, here's the broker's office, Costello. Let's go and invest your money. Then you can buy Marilyn that mink coat.
Abbott, I think it's better if I buy her one of them machines and let her whip up her own mink coat.
Now, wait a minute. What kind of a machine whips up a mink coat?
Ain't you never heard of a mink's master?
Never mind that. Come on, let's go in.
Hiya, fellas.
Well, Skinny Ennis, what are you doing? Buying some stock?
Yep. I got all my money invested in the Doodock Company. They make zippers.
Zippers?
Sure. Ain't you never heard of Zippity Doodock?
Get out of here.
How do you do, suckers? Gentlemen. I'm a stockbroker. What can I do for you?
Well, my friend Costello here would like to invest in a quick-moving stock.
Okay, then grab this kitchen chair and this whip and follow me.
Why do I need the kitchen chair and the whip?
I'm going to take you in the back room and show you some of our wildcat stock. You can sell short and be a bear or buy long and be a bull. Now, what would you like?
I'll take a short bear with a bull of pretzels. And see what those wild cats in the back room will have.
Tell the man what stock you want.
Look, mister, give me 50 shares of Walter Winchell and 40 shares of Hedda Hopper.
Walter Winchell and Hedda Hopper. What kind of stock is that?
American Tell and Tell. Ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard the last joke that Luella Parsons will ever write for this show.
Costello, I'll give you a good tip. Get in on Hiawatha Canoe.
Mister, when I get in a canoe, I don't need any tip from you. I can tip myself and get a quicker turnover, too.
Talk by myself. Look, Costello, do as the man says.
All right. Here, give me 10 shares of Hiawatha Canoe stock.
Attention, latest stock quotations. Hiawatha Canoes, 51. Hiawatha Canoes, 63. Hiawatha Canoes, 81.
Hey, Costello, what? You hear that? Your stock has gone up 26 points already.
Hooray, I'm rich. Come on, let's go to the first store. I'm going to buy Marilyn the best mink coat in town.
Well, Costello, they've certainly got plenty of fur coats in this store. Let's ask the lady where the mink coats are.
Pardon me, miss.
Well, if it isn't Mr. Orbit and Mr. Costello, you fought, little Manu.
Well, miss, what are you doing? What are you doing here at the Furriers?
Oh, I'm putting my new silver Fuchs coat in storage.
Storage?
Storage?
Oh, Abbott, you know what storage is. That's where you fill the pockets of your coot with moose bulls and hang it in the closet.
Well, I must be doshing off. As we say in Russian, a panya, via kalyapinya, can push katoyo.
And a pan of veal scallopini and a push to you, too.
Costello, hey, I think this chap is a furrier. Pardon me, sir, are you the salesman?
Yes, as Mrs. Nussbaum said to Fred Allen, you were expecting maybe Lauren Bagel.
Mister, I want to to buy a fur coat, and I don't care what it costs. What have you got for about $65?
$65? Well, here's a lovely little number, made from the fur of an animal called the whipsnove.
What is a whipsnove?
A whipsnove is an animal that lives on onions and garlic. And believe me, one whipsnove.
Hey, look, Mr. Costello wants to buy a mink coat for Marilyn Maxwell.
Well, as Mr. Anthony said to young Widow Brown, you have a problem. Now, here is a lovely mink coat for $3,500.
All right, well, that's all right. Come on, Costello, buy the coat and have it sent over to Marilyn Maxwell's house. We've got to get back to the broker's office and see how your stock is doing.
Fine, I'll deliver it to Miss Maxwell. That'll be $3,500.
Okay, here's my check. And as Lady Godiva said to her horse, I'm putting everything I've got on you.
Come on, Costello. The broker's office closes in 10 minutes, you know. Hey, look, Costello. Hey, what? They're marking up the quotations on Hiawatha Canoe stock.
Hiawatha Canoe, 95.
Quick, Abbott. I gotta mark down my profits. Give me a pencil.
Hiawatha Canoe, 63.
Give me another pencil.
Hiawatha Canoe, 21.
Another pencil.
Hiawatha Canoe, 9.5.
Pencil!
Hiawatha Canoe, wiped out.
Pencil! Pencils! Pencils! Anybody want to buy any pencils? Pencils for sale!
Presents lovely Marilyn Maxwell from Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer, producers of It Happened in Brooklyn. And here's Marilyn to sing for camel fans everywhere for sentimental reasons.
I love you for sentimental reasons. I hope you do believe me. I'll give you my heart. I love you, and you alone were meant for me. Please give your loving heart to me and say we'll never part. I think of you every morning, dream of you every night. Darling, I'm never lonely whenever you're inside. I love you for sentimental reasons. I hope you do believe me. I've given you my heart. Sentimental reasons. I hope you do believe me. I've given you my heart. I love you, and I've given you.
According to a recent nationwide survey, more doctors smoke Camels than any other cigarette.
Yes, three leading independent research organizations asked this question of 113,597 doctors. What cigarette do you smoke, doctor? The brand named most was Camel. And this preference is not confined to doctors. Today, more and more people are finding that Camels suit their T-zones to a T. Try a Camel on your T-zone. That's tea for taste and tea for throat. See if Camel's rich, full-bodied flavor of choice tobaccos doesn't charm your taste. If Camel's cool mildness doesn't agree with your throat. Yes, try a Camel now.
Well, Costello, you did it again. You lost all your money in the stock market. You're penniless. You're poverty-stricken. Why, when you walk down the street, everybody will say, there goes that tramp Costello.
Abbott, some people will say, there goes that tramp Costello. But my friends won't say that.
No. Well, what will your friends say?
There goes Mr. Costello, the tramp.
Yeah. You idiot, you know nothing about handling money.
Abbott, when it comes to handling money, nobody can hold a candle to me.
Why not?
It burns.
Costello, this is ridiculous. It's ridiculous, Costello. Look, hey, here comes Marilyn Maxwell, and she's wearing the coat. Remember, you've got to get it away from her some way and return it to the store, you'll go to jail.
Oh, there you are, Lewis, my darling. How can I ever thank you for this beautiful mink coat? It's the nicest present I ever got.
Marilyn, it ain't good enough for you. I'm going to take it back and get something better.
Lewis, what could be better than mink?
Box of candy?
Costello, if you don't get that coat, you'll get 10 years in jail.
Lewis, honey, I know it's your birthday next month, so what do you want me to bring you?
A cake with a file in it.
Oh, Lewis, you're so romantic. It's such a gorgeous night. Just look at that lovely moon and those bright stars.
Yeah, a guy is nuts not to be out catching eels on a night like this.
Well, thanks for the coat, Lewis. I'm going home now. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Now you've done it, you idiot. You've got to return that coat. You have to break into her house and steal it.
Abbott, my uncle broke into a girl's house and stole back a diamond ring he gave her.
What? Which uncle was that?
Uncle 914758.
Yes, but the trick is to break in without getting caught. Now, here's what we'll do. Marilyn Maxwell is crazy about Von Monroe singing. You call her on the phone. Make believe you're Von Monroe and invite her here to the studio. And while she's out of the house, you break in and steal a coat.
Abbott, Marilyn likes Al Jolson singing, too. Why don't we let Larry Parks call up? Let him get the coat.
Oh, get on the phone, you idiot, and try to sound like Von Monroe.
Okay. Oh, I'll sound like Von Monroe. Wait till I tighten the muscles on my tonsils.
Hello?
Racing with the moon.
Hello, who is this?
Racing with the moon.
Who is this?
It's Vaughn.
Vaughn? Oh, you mean Vaughn Johnson.
Now, listen.
Racing with the moon.
Oh, it's Vaughn Monroe.
In poison.
Oh, Mr. Monroe, it's so nice of you to call.
Marilyn, I'm down here at the studio. How would you like to come down and sing a duet with me on my program?
Oh, I'd love it. I'll be right down, and I'll wear my new mink coat. It's a Lulu.
Racing, and don't bring Lulu.
What?
Well, you see, my program is informal, so you better leave your mink coat at home.
Well, all right, Mr. Monroe, if you say so. I'll be right over. Goodbye.
She fell for it, Abbott.
Good. Now we'll go over to Marilyn's house and sneak in the window. Then you get the mink coat.
Abbott, I'm sorry I didn't give that coat to Mrs. Whitwash.
Why?
Her windows are easier to open.
Never mind that. Shh, Costello. What? Now that's Marilyn's window up there.
Yeah.
Get a ladder. Place it against the house and I'll climb up and open the window for you.
Okay, here's the ladder. Start climbing. Sorry, Abbott. That's no ladder. It's a Venetian blind.
Look, you moron. Hey, wait a minute. There's the fur coat on that chair. The window's open. Reach in and grab it.
Okay, Abbott.
Well, burglars, eh? Come along with me. I'm taking you to jail.
Oh, look, officer. We're Abbott and Costello. Now, if you'll forget about this little incident, I'll give you 2 tickets to our next broadcast.
Threatening an officer, eh? Get in the squad car of the both of you.
Calling all cars. Attention all cars. Attention all cars.
That's the police radio.
Calling car 18. Attention car 18. You are now car 19. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Order in the court. Costello, you are charged with stealing a mink coat. What have you got to say?
Your Honor, I can explain the whole thing. I'm in a jam because of marmalading circumstances. Therefore, it becomes necessary to interrogate the corpus delicti and taking into consideration Irium Lanolin and Jabrandi. It is insidious, immaterial, and irrelevant.
How can you say that?
It's easy when you don't know what you're saying.
Costello, will you keep quiet?
It's enough of this. Costello, I sentence you to 5 years and hard labor.
You mean breaking rocks at Alcatraz?
No, real hard labor. Finding apartments for California veterans. Hurry on!
Well, come on, Costello. Let's get back to NBC Studios and explain the whole thing to Marilyn.
Oh, Abbott. She... But I'm ashamed to face Marilyn.
You should be ashamed gambling your money in the stock market when you know absolutely nothing about it. Giving a check for $3,500 when you have no money in the bank. And then stooping so low as to steal the coat back. Do you realize the humiliation that you have caused me? My partner, why do you do these things to me?
Oh, I'm a boy. I wouldn't blame Marilyn if she never spoke to me again.
Louis, Louis, the most exciting thing has happened to me. I just had a date with Von Monroe. He's so sweet, and he's interested in my singing, and he's going to be my manager.
Abbott, you did this? Marilyn, why don't you let me be your manager?
Oh, Costello, you know nothing about girl singers and what it takes to make a girl successful.
I do, too. First, a girl has got to have a good voice.
And?
Well, it helps if she's pretty.
And?
And it don't hurt nothing if her father is president.
Oh, Louis. Louis, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but Vaughn said it was wrong for me to accept that mink coat from you, so you'll have to take it back. Vaughn said so.
Well, Costello, aren't you going to say something?
Racing with the moon. Abbott and Costello will be back in just a moment.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with yesteryear.
And now back to Bud Abbott and Lou Costello.
Well, Costello, it looks like Von Monroe has cut you out with Marilyn Maxwell. Well, what are you going to do for a date tonight?
Give me that phone. I can get plenty of girls. I'll get a date. Hello, let me talk to Jane Russell. Yes, I'm a very, very dear, close friend of hers. Who are you? Uh-oh, her husband? Bob Waterfield, the football player? Oh, just tell her that Bob Hope called.
Oh. Come on, Costello. Good night, folks.
Good night. Good night, everybody.
Listen to Abbott and Costello next Thursday when Costello tells his version of the famous story, The Three Little Pigs, which incidentally has nothing to do with the bears and bulls that you heard about tonight. Abbott and Costello will soon be seen in the new Universal International picture, Buck Privates Come Home. This is Michael Roy in Hollywood wishing you all a pleasant good night for Camel. Stay tuned now for the Eddie Cantor Show.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
From March 27th of 1947, it's been Abbott and Costello in Costello Invests in the Stock Market. In a moment, Suspense starring Frederick March in Actor's Blood as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Suspense, radio's outstanding theater of thrills, was first heard on CBS in June of 1942 with Charlie Ruggles starring in The Burning Court. The program was on the air for the next 20 years under a variety of talented directors, each bringing his own mark to suspense, making it one of the most diverse, unusually broad-based shows of the air. Suspense was known as an actor's theater. People like Cary Grant, Charles Laughton, Humphrey Bogart, Lucille Ball, Olivia de Havilland, Gregory Peck, Henry Fonda, and Orson Welles headed the casts. Many top film stars asked to return for encore performances. Suspense moved to 60 Minutes in 1948, where it continued under the leadership of William Romson until 1956. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear with Suspense, starring Frederick March and Actor's Blood. From August 24th of 1944. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Suspense. Tonight, Actor's Blood, written and told to us by Ben Hecht and starring Frederick March. This is the Man in Black, here for the Roma Wine Company of Fresno, California, to raise the curtain on a presentation unique in these weekly half hours of suspense. Tonight from Hollywood, Roma Wines bring you a star of the first magnitude, Mr. Frederick March. And in person, one of America's foremost tellers of tales, Mr. Ben Hecht of Broadway and Hollywood, who will appear as actor and narrator in a suspense play dealing with the mysterious death and the twisted passions and loyalties of the world behind the footlights. And so with Actor's Blood and with the performance of Frederick March, supported by Ben Hecht, from whom we will hear the narrative in the author's own words, we again hope to keep you in suspense.
Do you remember Maurice Tilliou? Probably not. Only students of the theater or people old enough to have applauded the heyday of Mrs. Leslie Carter and John Drew and the theatrical dialogues of the Divine Sarah would be likely to remember. During the years I knew him, I saw him in harness but three times. Once in a revival, once at a benefit, and the third time was the occasion of the anecdote I've set out to relate. By that time, his only claim to fame was the fact that he was the father of Marcia Tilliou. On a summer night in 1927, Marcia made a final exit worthy of the Tilliou tradition. For weeks after it happened, old Tilliou went around like the Ancient Mariner, holding with his baleful eye and his mournful song whoever crossed upon his path. But after a while, he too seemed to drop out of sight in the wake of his glamorous daughter, and like her, was forgotten. Then late one night, as I was getting ready for bed, the bells of my apartment rang.
Ben, I come with a message from the dead.
Indeed. Well, come on in and tell me about it.
Ben, do you believe in ghosts?
I've got nothing against them.
Good. I have just come from a miserable modern dress caricature of that greatest of the bard's plays, Macbeth. You will scarcely credit what these upstarts have done to Shakespeare's masterpiece.
They haven't altered the text, have they?
You recall the fourth scene of the third act?
Oh, yes. The scene in which Banquo's ghost appears.
Just so. In the folio edition of the play, the stage directions clearly read, "The ghost of Banquo enters and sits in Macbeth's place. The foul production which I have just witnessed, the ghost does no such thing. It is an empty chair to which Macbeth shrieks his guilty line, 'Thou canst not say I did it. Never shake thy gory locks at me.'"
An invisible ghost, eh? That's not so illogical.
Yeah, but what drama is there in it? How can we feel Macbeth's terror if it's an empty stool at which he shouts, "Avaunt and quit my sight! Let the earth hide thee! Thy bones are marrowless! Thy blood is cold! Thou hast no speculation in those eyes which thou dost glare with!"
The way you read those lines, sir, I have no trouble seeing this ghost.
Thank you. Now listen. I am going to produce that scene in modern dress. It's not going to be a namby-pamby production such as the one I witnessed tonight. I am going to give a banquet at my home, and there is going to be a place set at the table for my daughter, Marcia.
Look, Maurice, I'm very fond of you.
Ah, you are wondering why, aren't you, my boy? Like Hamlet, I am but mad north-northwest. The empty place at the table would be purely symbolic, I assure you. And no apparitions will appear, not to you and me, at any rate. I cannot guarantee what my daughter's murderer will see there.
Marcia's murderer will be there?
They will all be there. All who loved her, all who hated her. And woe to the hand that shed this costly blood.
But if you know who the murderer is, why don't you tell the police?
Ah, police? My daughter, sir, would not have wanted so crude and sordid an epilogue to her life story. Like her father before her and my parents before me, she had actor's blood in her veins. She shall be avenged, my friend. But it will be no affair of handcuffs and policemen. I'll not go whining on Marcia's behalf among the cigar butts and cuspidors in some precinct station. No, no. Her murderer shall be unmasked at a mighty banquet. On Friday next, at 8:30, curtain time, my friend. I'll see you there.
Yes, yes, I'll be there.
With Ben Heck in person as the narrator of his own story, and with Frederick March as star, you have heard the prologue to Actor's Blood, tonight's tale of suspense.
The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with yesteryear.
And now it is with pleasure that we bring back to our soundstage Mr. Ben Hecht, narrator and author of Actor's Blood, starring Frederick March. Tonight's tale of suspense.
It rained on that Friday night. Thunder rolled in the sky. And the streets were full of that picnic-like confusion which storm brings to the city. Waiting under the hotel awning for a taxi, I turned over in my mind the strange invitation that had brought me out into this wild and stormy night. I was rather thrilled at the prospect of old Tillyhue's dinner, for his intention was plain: to assemble a company of suspects in the murder of his daughter, Marcia. And he was obviously going to climax the evening by some formal accusation of guilt. I knew pretty well who the suspects were, and I suppose I was one of them. Alfred O'Shea would be there, of course. Alfred O'Shea. The man who had written Marcia Tillyhue's first successful play and their last. Broadway had its own private joke about the title of the last. It was called Forgotten Lady. It was after the final curtain of the last performance of Forgotten Lady that Alfred O'Shea chose to tell her. Marcia told the story at the time as a joke on herself.
Hello, Marcia.
Oh, why, darling, you waited for me in my dressing room. Like old times, I'm touched. Really touched.
Look, sweetheart, you're off stage now, so cut the Bernhardt. You know why I'm here.
I do.
All right, I'll say it again. I'll say it for the last time. I want a divorce. I want to marry Rena Krasnov.
I want to marry Rena Krasnov. Oh, it's such a bad line. And from such a great playwright. No, dear Alfred. Not for her. It'd be too belittling a successor. Can't you see, darling, after all we've been to each other, it's like Pygmalion wanting to trade in his beautiful Galatea for a wooden Indian.
And it's no dice, eh?
No dice, Alfred. No divorce. Not as long as I live. Now be a darling and help me out of this dress.
Okay, Marcia, you've just made your own bargain.
You can come out from behind that screen now, Father.
How did you know I was there?
Your asthma, darling. I'm glad you're here, even if you are a perfectly fiendish old eavesdropper. Here, you can unhook me since that swine refused to...
I warned you against marrying that jackanapes of a playwright, Marcia.
Oh, Father, you're saying I told you so. What I really wanted was to weep on your shoulder. Ouch!
I'm sorry. Look here, Marcia. What are you going to do about this career of
now,
yours?
Now, darling, please don't go into that old routine about my being the last scion of the royal family of the American theater. I'm nothing but a combination of your name and a playwright who specializes in shallow, brittle female leads that enable me to get applause by simply acting myself.
Marcia, I won't allow you to speak this way about yourself. You're a great artist.
Oh,
You've taken your place in the great tradition of the stage beside the immortal figures of Rachel, Siddons, Bernhardt, and Modjeska. Marcia, let O'Shea go. He was never worthy of you. Play Juliet next season. Show them you don't need a fashionable playwright and tailor-made parts to succeed. Show them you have actor's blood.
Actor's blood, actor's blood. I'm sick of hearing about it. Just because you and Mother thought it was cute to stick me out there behind the footlights at the age of 5, because you never had any real life. You didn't see any reason why your daughter should have. I'm supposed to have actor's blood.
All right, all right, all right. I'm only thinking of you, Marcia. Only of you. But that O'Shea is a hot-headed Irishman. He came very near to threatening your life when you refused to do as he asked.
Good. I wish he would kill me. I'm sick of the whole rotten business.
Yes, O'Shea was a suspect. He would be at old Tillyhue's dinner. He would be seated across the table from the empty chair. And would he see a Banquo's ghost of Marcia Tillyhue? But O'Shea would be in a goodly company of suspects. Fritz von Klauber would be there, for sure. Fritz von Klauber. Not a man I should have liked to have as an enemy, that. Abnormally sensitive to insult, von Klauber was possessed also of an impenetrable Prussian stupidity. His first American production was a play called Jubilee for Spring, and Marcia Tillyhue starred in it. It was the most sensational flop of the Broadway season. After the first night performance in the 21 Club, Marcia held her own private autopsy on von Klauber's dead turkey.
You see, darlings, Mr. von Klauber, my esteemed producer, loves his turkey farm so much, he sometimes forgets he's on Broadway.
Terrific, Marcia. How about that for my column?
Sure, Walter. Anything at all, it's all yours.
Marcia, shh. Von Klauber, he's over there at the next table. He's heard every word.
Good. Let him hear. He's going to hear from me in the morning anyway when I start looking for a new producer.
Go ahead, my sweet Marcia. Go ahead. Rag me in public. I could kill you for this. Do you hear me? I could kill you.
Oh, you could, darling. Well, if my beloved husband doesn't do me in as he keeps threatening to do, perhaps I'll ask you to oblige. I may yet be spared the nuisance of doing the job myself.
Marcia, I forbid you to talk like this.
Sorry, Father. Must be the actor's blood cropping up again.
Yes, von Klauber would surely be present at Tillyhue's ghostly dinner. As I got into the taxi and gave the driver Tillyhue's address, my mind was still turning upon the terrible question, who killed Marcia Tillyhue? Third on my list of suspects was a character named Maury Stein. Maury Stein. A one-time racing tout and small-time gangster, Maury turned his brilliant, if slightly frightening, talents to flesh peddling. That is to say, he was a theatrical agent. Marcia did 2 shows under his management, both of them flops. It wasn't her fault. There was no belittlement of the name Tillyhue. It was still an electric sign, but growing ghostly, slipping still aglow into the side streets of fame. Maury Stein was Marcia Tillyhue's last substitute for love.
Maury, will you stop staring at that door?
Let's get out of here.
Oh, relax. This is a charming room. I like it here.
Look, chick, I said let's get out of here. Understand?
Perfectly. I understand that Mrs. Maury Stein may come walking in that door. Perhaps she'll put 2 and 2 together about us. That'd make you sad, wouldn't it? Because you've signed over all your unscrupulously earned money to your good wife. Oh, just in case questions should be asked, you know. And if she gets any ideas, she may cut you off without a dime. And then...
Shut up!
You know, I've half a mind
to... Did you hear what I said? Shut up! You ever so much as take up your coat, we're gone.
Maury, you are a worm. A despicable, slimy little worm.
Sister, nobody talks to Maury Stein like that and gets away with it, see? Nobody.
There was to be one more opening night in Marcia Tilliou's career. And ironically enough, the three men she had cause to fear most of all her enemies were doing the honors. O'Shea had written it, Von Klauber was the producer, and Maurice Stein had put up the money. I arrived backstage at the Broadhurst at 8:20 to find the three of them in hysterics. 10 minutes to curtain time and no Marcia. I found old Tilliou sitting in a dressing room, nursing a sprained ankle and very upset.
For the first time, I'm really worried about Marcia.
What's the matter?
I don't know. We've been calling her hotel since 6 o'clock. She refuses to answer the phone. Ben, go over there. You're the only one she'll listen to. No Tilliou has ever missed a performance, and Marcia, of all people, must not be the first. It's those villains out there who've done this, spreading insidious poison like Iago, tearing at her heart with their fangs until she's afraid to go on. Go, Ben, try to reason with her.
Okay, Pop, I'll do my best to bring her back. I trotted the 3 blocks to Marcia's hotel. The clerk at the desk met me with a deadpan.
Well, Mr. Heck, Miss Tilliou hasn't come down yet. No key in her box.
I took the elevator up. I turned left and walked down the corridor. I knocked on the door. No answer. Tried the knob. Door opened. And then it all added up. Yes, it added up. To a gaudy room in shambles. Mirrors smashed. Perfume bottles shattered. The portrait of Marcia is Pierrette. Cut to ribbons. And finally it added up to Marcia herself. Cold and white and terribly beautiful. Lying there on the bed with 3 round bullet holes in a neat triangle just over the heart. There was no mistaking it. Marcia Tilliou was dead. Murdered. That was the sum total of the addition I was doing in my head as I rode in a taxi the 20 blocks from my hotel to old Tilio's house on West 84th Street. Maybe I added it up wrong, but I felt sure I hadn't. I was even more certain when I saw old Tilliou standing there at the head of the table to greet the guests he had assembled on the promise of revealing the identity of Marcia's murderer. Promptly at 8:30, he made his entrance. He had brought a stranger into the room with him.
Thank you. Thank you, all of you, for waiting so patiently. I trust you found your mutual company not too tiresome. I should like to introduce my guest of honor. May I present Mr. Carl Schuttler of the District Attorney's Office. Now, if you will all be seated, the place cards are plainly marked. Please, please do not disarrange them.
Yeah,
thank you, Aspirin.
Well, I see one short. And who, may I ask, is that empty place for? Banquo's gold?
That, my dear Mr. Von Klauber, is for a beloved guest known to all of you.
Beloved guest, huh? Let's see now. Well, hey, listen to this. This seat has indeed been reserved for one known to all of us.
Who is it?
It's been reserved for Marcia Tilliou.
What the...
Please, I'd like to change my place.
Come on, sit down, Rita. Marcia was never... She was too sensible to play ghosts.
I am an old actor. With the audience seated and the curtain up, I find it hard to wait. Art is long, but time is fleeting. And there is one who bids me speak. Love, hear thou. How desolate the heart is ever calling, ever unanswered, and the dark rain falling, then as now. You are wondering if I really believe my daughter Marcia is present in this galaxy of her friends. It may be the wandering wits of an old man, but I see her sitting there, tragic and beautiful. About her the sound of rain and of sweet bells jangling out of tune. Forgive me. You have not come here tonight to hear a doting father spread his miseries before you, but for a sterner business, which, from your courtesy, your attentiveness, I feel sure you have guessed. Mr. Schutler asked me to tell him this matter privately, but I refused. For you are all her friends, her honorable friends, and I wanted you present. Who killed my daughter? Who took her life? There's the question. I have the answer. Yes, Mr. Schutler, the murderer is here. He sits here among us now at my table.
Shall I lock the door now, Mr. Tilly?
Yes, lock the door. Lock it tight. Leave no chance for escape. Ha ha! It's too late now. No power in heaven or earth can save him.
All right, Mr. Tilly, the door's locked.
My friends, is this not like a play? Your face is waiting for the name. The name of Iscariot, the Judas. That's it. Clear your throat. Midget, worm, look about you. Who knows? The villain may be right beside you. Who knows but that you may be his next victim.
Mr. Tilly...
Yeah, I keep my promise, Mr. Schutler. I have the proofs, all of them. Enough to send the murderer from this table to the gallows. The one who killed Marcia is looking at me now. Ah, the blood on his hands, the terror in his eyes. I'll tell you his name. His name is...
Let me go!
My God!
He's killing me!
Everybody there where you are!
No, no. Right,
not that!
Down.
Not that!
A knife!
A knife!
My God! Where are you?
A dagger handle protruded from old Tilliou's crimson shirt front. His eyes were closed. We carried him into the next room and waited outside while the doctor worked over him.
Mr. Heck?
I'm Ben Heck, doctor.
Oh. Will you come in, please? He's asking for you.
Doctor, is he...
The knife pierced the heart. He hasn't much longer.
Ben... Ben, is that you, Ben?
Yes, it's me. Who did it?
Lean over so I can see your face.
There, satisfied? Let me fill out of my pocket.
Wait. What is that?
Why, it's a letter. I must have stuck it into the pocket of this suit the last time I wore it.
Wait, what's in that letter, Ben?
Why, I don't know. I haven't even opened it.
Oh, that's Marshall's handwriting. A letter from the dead. Open it, Ben. Read it to me.
Look, you mustn't excite yourself.
When was that letter mailed?
It's postmarked the 10th. It must have been the day before...
Read the letter, Ben.
All right.
What does it say, Ben? Read it.
It says, Dear Ben, this is to remind you of the opening at the Broadhurst tonight. I hope you will be there because, I sincerely believe that this is one of the greatest roles I have ever played, and I'm so anxious to make good in it because of Father's faith in me.
She cared. She really cared. What I thought.
Sure she did. She'd have been proud of your performance in there this evening, too, Pop. You were great.
Thank you, Ben. Thank you.
Doctor.
Oh, yes, what? Oh. Well, that's that. He was quite an actor in his day, wasn't he?
Yes, quite an actor.
How is he doing? Huh? What did he say? Did he say anything?
He's dead. I've got a letter here that will explain everything. It's a pity I didn't find it sooner. I haven't had this dinner suit on since the night of Marsh's opening. It fell out of my pocket when I leaned over the bed in there. It was written by Marcia Tilliou the day she died.
Marcia,
indeed. Says, Ben, I'm bored, tired, hurt, sick, full of nasty things. I'd stay a while longer, but death seems easier and simpler than life. What are a few pills, more or less, to one who has swallowed so much? Take care of Father. He liked you the best for the last time, Marcia.
Suicide. It's a suicide note. But what about the bullets?
And to guess? The old man worshipped her. She was his star. But stars don't commit suicide. Only failures do that. So he fired 3 bullets into her dead body, slashed the painting, and wrecked the place to make it look like a crime of passion.
He must have been mad as a hatter.
Oh, he was sane. I think he really saw her as murdered by all of us. Her so-called friends who had let her down when she needed them most. Do you realize that old barnstormer was playing his death scene from the moment he came into this room tonight? He'd rehearsed it in his bedroom for days, sharpening away at Macbeth's old toad stabber. He had his lines down pat. He staged his elaborate set scene this evening and killed himself in such a way that we'd all be raked over the coals, not only for Marsh's murder, but for his own as well.
Well, it was a lovely piece of old-fashioned miming, but as fruitless a drama as I ever had the misfortune to witness.
You're right, O'Shea. Plot was full of holes. We could have helped him a lot with the construction, but it was a great last night.
And so closes Actor's Blood, written and narrated by Ben Hecht and starring Frederick March. Tonight's study in Suspense. Suspense is produced and directed by William Spear. Suspense.
Presented by Roma Wines. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
From August 24th of 1944, it's been Frederick March starring in Actor's Blood, part of Suspense. Well, that's all the time we have for on this edition of Yesteryear, but join us again next week at the same time and tell a friend about us as well to enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you so. Dio, volio, do, dio, do. Radio, I miss you.
The preceding program, copyright Edgewater Productions, all rights reserved. KCEA Atherton Redwood City, a broadcast service of the Sequoia Union High School District, home of the Sequoia High School Cherokees, online at kcea.org. Thank you.
Every night a body should relax after all the wear and tear. Get that oxygen your body lacks, get it in the open air. Go and find a little rendezvous underneath the starry skies. Take someone like me along with you for a little exercise. Petting in the park, petting in the dark. First you walk a little, then talk a little, and then you steal a little kiss. Heave a little sigh, oh my. Act a little shy, oh why. Snuggle just a little, then hug a little, and cuddle up and whisper this. Come on, there's a lovely moon, we can't disappoint him. Come on, don't you know it's June, and everybody's got somebody petting in the park, petting in the dark. Dad and Mother did it, but we admit it, I'm petting in the park with you. In the dark. First you walk a little, then talk a little, then you steal a little kiss. Heave a little sigh, act a little shy. Snuggle just a little, then hug a little, and cuddle up and whisper this. Come on, there's a lovely moon, we can't disappoint him. Come on, don't you know it's June, and everybody's got somebody petting in the park, petting in the dark. Dad and Mother did it, but we admit it, I'm petting in the park with you.
Nothing but the best music, 24/7, around the world, nonstop. The best of the big bands on Big Band 89.1 KCEA. Online at kcea.org. The home of the big bands.
Not a sign of people who want
somebody and start jazzing round. Ow!
Hun, don't you hear the trombone moan? Just listen to the saxophone. Gee, hear the clarinet and flute. Cornet jazzing with a mute. Just makes me throw myself away when I hear him play that weeping melancholy strain. Ooh, but it's soothing to the brain. Just wanna get right up and dance. Don't care, I'll take most any chance.
No, no other blues get to choose
but Royal Garden Blues.
They'd never heard from Cuban Pete. There came to Harlem's door one day a Cuban band with something new to say. When they began to play, they played the Cuban boogie woogie. Their music held a new delight because they had the rumba rhythm right. Just like Havana, still it was a Cuban boogie woogie. It began when they heard a band from Dixieland meet. Every man wanted to incorporate the 8th beat, straight 8th beat. So now they have it figured fine, and what they play is really on the line. It's all combined and it comes out the Cuban boogie woogie. Thank you.
You're tuned in to the number one station for big bands. Whether it's the driving beat of Benny Goodman's Sing, 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 the lyrics that tug at your heart of Vera Lynn's White Cliffs of Dover, or the rhythm that pulls at your feet of Artie Shaw's Dancing in the Dark, it's all right here, the soundtrack of your life on Big Band 89.1 KCEA, the home of the big bands.
Without you, it's a blue.